You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
Thank God for the judiciary in this country to respect the Constitution, to stand up from whatever pressures may be put upon the judiciary, and to say what the law is. That's what the Ninth Circuit did today.
Today, the Ninth Circuit of Appeals said to our family and millions of Americans that we are equal under the law.
When Proposition 8 doesn't allow parents like mine to marry, it isn't just defining their love as taboo or wrong. It says that our family, that my brothers, that my mothers, shouldn't belong. And we don't get to be the same as my friends' families.
That's Ted Olson. He's an attorney for Proposition 8 opponents. He's a former U.S. Solicitor General, along with a plaintiff in the case opposed to Proposition 8 that was declared just today, about midday, unconstitutional by the Ninth Circuit Federal Appeals Panel, along with her son. That would be Chris Perry, a plaintiff, and her son, Spencer Perry, reflecting on today's decision to, well, at least at this point, say that Prop 8, California's ban on same-sex marriage, is unconstitutional. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is going to join us to talk about that. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, February the 7th. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us from GetReligion.org to talk about media coverage of the Susan G. Komen Foundation's decision to go back on funding for Planned Parenthood. They weren't going to fund them, then they are going to fund them. Then news comes out earlier today that one of the bright lights at Komen has decided to resign over the issue, or leave Komen over the issue. Then we're going to start a three-part series, part one today, on pastors and elders. Pastor Timothy Meck will join us. He's author of the Issues Etc., Book of the Month for February, Pastors and Elders, Caring for the Church and One Another. A call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and our Twitter address, @issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, you heard Ted Olson and Chris Perry and Spencer Perry there in the open. A little bit of vindication, they think, on their part for same-sex marriage and for same-sex couples. What's your reaction to today's federal appeals panel decision?
Well, I'm not at all surprised that Judge Reinhardt and the other members of the Ninth Circuit decided to uphold Judge Walker's decision and overturn the will of the voters in passing Proposition 8. I'm not a bit surprised. Everything that you heard from Judge Reinhardt in the courtroom signaled that he really wants to leave the state of California with same-sex marriage as his parting gift, you know, before he retires. So I'm not the slightest bit surprised by the outcome. I'm disappointed, and of course, I don't think it's correct. And I think, you know, Ted Olson saying that thank God for the judiciary is, you know, self-serving in the extreme, because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is the most overturned federal court in the country, you know. So the Supreme Court smacks them down on a regular basis, so I would not be at all surprised to see that they do so in this case as well.
So this was expected. This is part of a bigger process that is headed, of course, for the U.S. Supreme Court. What do people need to understand about Prop 8 in California, and in particular about how the courts are being used, what shall we say? Well, did you say it? To overturn the will of the voters?
Well, you know, look, the Proposition 8 was a perfectly valid election. It was a perfectly valid constitutional amendment. It is currently the law of the land in California, and it's part of the Constitution of California that the voters themselves voted on to say that they want the union of one man and one woman to be the only form of marriage recognized in the state of California. This is California, the most liberal state in the union. It's not like some big Southern Baptist stronghold or something. It's California, home of Hollywood and all the rest of it. So it's a pretty strong signal that the public is not sort of going along quietly with the march of history. And what is happening is that the Proposition 8 trial is trying to say that the voters of California may have created a valid amendment to their own constitution, but in fact it violates the federal constitution. And if it violates the federal constitution, that means not only is Proposition 8 turned over, it means all of the other state-level constitutional amendments and state-level definitions of marriage that have been enacted in the various states around the country, all of those could be overturned if the ruling is as sweeping as it seems as though it might be. So, in other words, if there's a federal right to genderless marriage, that will be the case in all states, not just in California. So that's what people need to understand. You know, you may think you're all comfy and cozy in your state there that has, you know, a successful ban on the redefinition of marriage. And I know a lot of your listeners are in such states, but don't be misled that there's a federal issue at stake here, and we could lose it.
What do our listeners need to know about Judge Reinhold? And as you've said already here today, it's pretty obvious what he wants out of this. He can hardly claim to be unbiased on the issue.
Well, Judge Reinhold, you know, I must say, when I was in the courtroom last December and watched them all perform, and I was actually surprised that Reinhold, kind of smacked Ted Olson and David Boies around a little bit in the courtroom, which really surprised me and gave me some small glimmer of hope, you know, that maybe there would be a better ruling than this. But they did rule in our favor on the issue of the videotaping. So no matter what, it's at least to the best of my understanding, the videotapes of the Prop 8 trial are not going to be publicly released so that the people who testified can be publicly ridiculed from one end of the country to the other. You know, that they did put the kibosh on that. But Reinhold is well known as a judicial activist for liberal causes. I mean, you know, he is the poster child for that whole position, right? And so this is not a surprising state of affairs at all that he would rule in this way.
So what happens next?
Well, both sides are getting ready for going to the Supreme Court to take this whole thing to the Supreme Court. And I think that the person they're all looking at is Anthony Kennedy. You know, is Anthony Kennedy going to, in fact, rule in favor of the will of the people in Proposition 8, or is Anthony Kennedy going to vote in favor of the Roe v. Wade of marriage, of the marriage issue? And that remains to be seen. So both sides are gearing up their legal briefs and turning their fundraising machines in action and all the rest of it.
So the Supreme Court will be deciding if they want to take this case, which they could hardly turn away from it, I would think.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that they'll take it.
They will be deciding whether or not there is a sweeping overturning of all bans, whatever they may be, legislative or constitutional bans against same-sex marriage in all 50 states when they take
this
case.
Exactly. That's what would be at stake. That's what would be at stake. Now, interestingly enough, today, at the very time this was being announced, I am right now in Houston. I was debating at the University of Houston Law School against the man who was the chief counsel for Mr. Lawrence in Lawrence versus Texas, which is the the case that overturned the sodomy statute and which really, in a way, paved the way for same-sex marriage. He's an interesting character. His name is Mitch Kateen. He quoted the Lawrence decision. He quoted Scalia's dissent from the Lawrence decision, and he said, Scalia basically says, if you take this court's reasoning that they have gone through, from which he dissented, there's a straight line from that to same-sex marriage, to the redefinition of marriage. We don't have any grounds for telling them they can't get married. If we're going to overturn the sodomy statutes the way we did, and on the grounds that we did, we've opened the door. And so that was quite interesting that he's basically quoting Scalia as a authority on his side for why he thinks the court will do what he wants it to do. But Scalia, in effect, of course, when he said that, I think he thought that was a self-evident argument against the whole thing. And, of course, at the time, we were assured by the proponents of the of overturning the sodomy statute, that of course it would have no such thing, that have no such impact. Justice Scalia is just hyperventilating. It's not really going to lead to same-sex marriage and so on. You know, none of that's going to happen. Well, you know, here we are less than 10 years later dealing with exactly that.
Finally, with only a minute here, Jennifer, when you referred to this as the Roe v. Wade of same-sex marriage, this Prop 8 headed toward the Supreme Court and its constitutionality being decided, are you essentially saying that this will be yet another example of the high court making a decision, if they do say it is unconstitutional, irrespective of the will of the American population, of the American electorate?
That's exactly what I mean. I mean that it will be judges deciding that the legislation and constitutions of the several states are not good enough, that there's a higher law that they answer to, and that they will impose what they think is a higher law, regardless of what the Constitution actually says, regardless of what the people actually want. It will be a major foray into judicial activism. So it's in that sense, I mean it. But I also mean it. It's also comparable to Roe versus Wade, too, in the sense that it will be extraordinarily divisive for the country, just as Roe versus Wade has been divisive. I mean, when Roe versus Wade came down, the pro-abortion forces basically said, you know what, all the people who oppose us are just going to die off, and all the opposition is going to die off, and the issue will eventually fade away into the sunset because the people who care, you know, aren't going to be around to care. We're going to control everybody's education, and all the opposition will fade away. Well, that has absolutely not happened, and as a matter of fact, opposition to Roe v. Wade and the abortion regime has only intensified to where the young generation is more pro-life than its elders. So the same dynamic will kick into place here, with a Supreme Court mandate for nationalized same-sex unions across the country. Now, the same dynamic will go into play with people feeling alienated from their government, people feeling marginalized from their government, and further division within the country. That's exactly what's going to happen, and exactly like Roe v. Wade.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. We'll have a link to the Ruth Institute and to the blog for Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse at our website, issuesetc.org. When we come back, Molly Zingler-Hemingway joins us to talk about media coverage of the Susan G. Komen back and forth.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
This is Pastor Miller of Trinity Lutheran Church in Bay Ridge. We preach, teach, and confess the historic Catholic faith. For a refuge from the pop spirituality and shallow preaching that swirls about in our day, come to our haven at 9020 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn. In addition to Mrs. Solano Sunday School at 9:30, we have liturgy at 11 a.m., followed by a fellowship meal and Bible study after the service. You're invited to come and be a part of Trinity, a biblical and sacramental church. Visit trinitybayridge.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
How does Jesus' incarnation provide us with a response to religious relativism? Find out in an article that I've written for the latest Issues, Etc. journal. It's titled God in a Box, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Michael Schuerman's journey from moralistic therapeutic deism to the rock-solid theology of the Reformation. The online Issues, Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.